podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, and welcome to another Stat Me Up for Anfield Index, ladies and gents. It's just another massive week, isn't it? There's a Manchester sandwich with a Michael Edwards fill-in to discuss. There's a dead rubber tomorrow night for the Europa, and there's multi-club models and midfield options to decipher. All to take me through it is the stat man himself, the Hungarian hipster, Ben Boczak. Ben, are we ready? Are we prepared? Have we done our homework for this week?
Yeah, I think I'm excited for this show. Maybe the most excited I've ever been just because of all the news and everything that's happened. So I think that's a big statement as well, because I'm most of the time I'm excited for these shows. Like over the last season, you know, there hasn't really been a reason not to be excited to talk about Liverpool. So I think it's a big statement.
Well, your main man, the laptop guru, as he's called by some himself, Michael Edwards, is back, CEO of football operations. Importantly to say, isn't it, for FSG, not for Liverpool specifically. Multi-club bits, what we'll get into as well. Important to discuss that. But the original stats man, I should say, is back at Anfield, or back with FSG. But we know the impact and the role he's going to have at Liverpool. Now, you've seen it, Ben. I know you have. The statement or the stories that have come out. What's your honest kind of gut feeling around the whole Edwards story and the information that we've got as it's come out step by step? And that big, because I can't really think of another way of describing that, that big old FSG statement as well.
I think it was clear that if it was ever going to come back, it was going to have to be a different role, a sort of promotion, as you would say.
Yeah.
I think it certainly sounds like from the statement that he made, the statement that FSG released, it sounds like one of the most enticing factors was the fact that he wouldn't just oversee Liverpool. He talked about, you know, helping FSG acquire another club in the football realm. So I think that's probably the thing that he is looking forward to the most, because when we're talking about that, it's pretty much what he did to Liverpool starting in 2012 when he first arrived. If he's going to oversee another club, I'm sure, you know, that is going to be the model. Obviously, the ambition is to have young players, and you know, those young players may potentially end up at Liverpool, but at the same time, you want to make whatever club you acquire as successful as possible as well, because, you know, just taking FSG into account, you want that club to be financially viable and not just to provide players for Liverpool. And I think when you look at the model of Union SG, for example, who are providing players for Brighton, the likes of Kari Mitoma and etc., Simon Adingra, but they're also selling players like Victor Boniface to Xabi Alonso's Bayer Leverkusen, and obviously he's doing very well there. So I think that's the model that Liverpool will look towards, and I think that's what appeals to Edwards the most. He's always been sort of wanting to start things from scratch. He's good at building things, and I think if it's clear now, and there's been a lot of rumours over the last few years that FSG are looking to this sort of multi-club model, it's clear now that that's what they're going to do, and they've got the best man for that role in Edwards, I think.
Are you that person who has everything? The coolest merch, and those must-have fan threads. Well, over at our Anfield Index shop, we've gone that extra mile when it comes to pimping up your Liverpool collection. from our popular range of bespoke design t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies and hats, to our signature edition mugs, prints and coasters, all provided with fast worldwide shipping. We have something for every red. We also stock official LFC merchandise and are licensed with the Premier League and UEFA to sell official iron-on shirt badges and sleeve patches. As a listener to this podcast, you can get 10% off everything with coupon code AIPRO10. Just head over to anfieldindex.shop or find us on Etsy by searching for Anfield Index.
Yeah, there's one key reason. I think that's the root cause of why they brought him back. And as you said, why he's probably accepted the role, you know, it was quite clear from his statement. I mean, the obvious one people are going to link to is, like you said, Brighton Union SG. That's the link up. Obviously, we're hoping for more of that than a Chelsea Strasbourg style approach and the fans, you know, protested outside the training ground or anything like that at all. And that would make complete sense. Club-wise, Ben, now people are talking all sorts of things. Now, get it, like Liverpool Montevideo in Uruguay, because that saves a naming job and things like that, as being one to acquire the South American market. All sorts of clubs being kind of mooted, proposed. This is probably a difficult question and not the simplest to answer, I appreciate. From your stats, from your research, is there any clubs you could see or think may be on their radar for FSG, for Edwards at all?
Yeah, well, I think in particular, there's going to be leagues that you're going to be looking at, because, you know, it's all well and good buying a club. Like, for example, Liverpool had that partnership with MTK Budapest.
Yeah.
A lot of Hungarian players came over, but it didn't really benefit Liverpool a lot. None of the players have ever ended up making first team appearances or even getting big money sales. I think the biggest one was maybe Peter Gulacsi, who went to Salzburg.
Yeah.
But even that didn't make Liverpool a lot of money. So, you know, Liverpool have two priorities. One is favorable work permits, so you can attract players from all over the world. And the other is obviously having a high quality league where, you know, there are other competitive teams in the division. And there's a real chance for players to develop and progress to the Premier League and progress further. And I think when you take those criteria into account, you've got to look to Europe and you've got to look to Belgium as one of the biggest possibilities. Again, when you take into consideration the financial aspects as well, because, you know, FSG won't want to overspend, and I'm sure there will be, you know, better teams that they could buy from bigger clubs, but they're going to cost a lot more money. However, in Belgium, you know, for many years now, the Belgian and Dutch clubs have been talking about forming a league together. And one of the reasons why there's a lot of conversations about that, and I think it will eventually happen, is because financially, a lot of the Belgian clubs and a lot of the Dutch clubs are struggling. There's been a lot of TV cuts and stuff like that. And that's one of the reasons why so many Premier League clubs have Belgian teams, not just Brighton. There's Leicester with OH Leuven, City, of course, with Lommelest.
Yeah.
And I think there's another one, but it's not coming to my head. But there has been a lot of investment into Belgian football from Premier League owners. And that is one of the reasons, is because it's cheap, favorable work permits, and a competitive environment. Even if you're looking at the second division in Belgium, there's a lot of good young players playing there, and it's a good test for young players. And I think I mentioned one of the teams that Liverpool could look at, which other Premier League clubs have already looked at. They're a bit in need of financial support, is KV Oostende. I think the likes of Bournemouth, which interestingly, obviously, Richard Hughes
is
involved with, they considered investing in KV Oostende. Then I think it was Newcastle and Wolves as well, who were rumoured to invest in them. And I think that could be a team to watch. If we're looking at sort of other leagues, exploring other potentials, I think Bordeaux is an interesting one. Obviously Boley at Chelsea tried to buy them before he got Strasbourg. there again, in need of financial aid. I think that owner has not had a huge success financially. Obviously, there was risk of them being demoted to, I think, France's sort of semi-professional leagues at one point.
Wow.
That they managed to escape those financial sanctions, and I think they appealed them, and they ended up in France's second division. But they're still in need of financial aid, and obviously that's a very historic club with a very interesting manager in Albert Riera, obviously.
Former Reds, yeah.
Former Liverpool player. He did his coaching badges with Alonso, had a lot of success in Slovenia coaching there, and sort of plays a similar sort of style, possession-based style to Alonso. So you've already got a coach there who, plays good football that, you wouldn't necessarily need to bring your own people in. And on top of that, it's a club that would probably be available on the cheap as well. So I think that is another one that could be a possibility. And then I think lastly, if we're looking at leagues, I think many people have mentioned sort of Portugal because
Yeah.
bringing South American players. But I think right now a lot of like Portuguese clubs are pretty stable, and I haven't really found one that could be potential investment for FSG. Another possibility is perhaps Scandinavia, but again, I'm not really aware of financial problems there. But Scandinavia is another league where we've seen Copenhagen, Midtjylland, and
Yeah.
Nordsjælland in Denmark in particular bring in young talents from all over the world because of those relaxed work permit rules. They've developed, they've gone on to top five leagues, and it's another sort of breeding ground for young talent. So I think those are the options for Liverpool to explore. I think.
Hello, I'm here to annoy you. I'm here to annoy you into listening to more of me and more of others on EPL Index. We don't just have the Anfield Index stuff. We've got EPL Index as well, which covers the entirety of the Premier League. And we have three podcasts and a whole bunch of really good writing on EPLindex.com. The podcasts are my own two-footed podcast, which is every day at 4 p.m., Monday through Friday, covering the whole league. We have A Tad Predictable, hosted by Tadiwa. You know Tadiwa, he does Anfield Index. He presents A Tad Predictable before every Premier League match week. And then Kevin De Vries and his crew on the EPL Roundtable, they're every week after the Premier League match week. So make sure you listen to everything we're doing on EPL Index and follow us there on Twitter at EPL Index. Thank you. Bye-bye.
They will stay in Europe if the goal is for developing global talents, just because but it's closer to the environment where you want to get them
That's
to,
right.
which is a top five league or Liverpool. And for that factor, obviously Europe makes the most sense.
Yeah, it really doesn't. I suppose it's an interesting one because football development and players, as you said, that's absolutely going to be an FSG's remit. I get that. Liverpool fans will have their own opinions on multi-club models, as we know, and everyone's entitled to that opinion, whether they see it as a good or a bad thing. I suppose if it does go ahead, whether it's in whatever guys like a Brighton Union SG, we're all going to be looking and thinking, okay, how do we get those players to Liverpool? Where's the route into the first team, isn't it? That's what the option is for us, really, or us Reds are thinking, what's the point, a little bit, so to speak. So it will be one to watch and keep an eye on. And I know you tweeted about this as well, Richard Hughes. I mean, if someone had said to me before I knew about him at Bournemouth, Richard Hughes, he was one of those players in the sort of early 2000s, wasn't he? A very average midfielder who played at the bottom end of the Premier League, top end of the Championship, so to speak, for Portsmouth as they yo-yoed between. But you were saying there's actually quite a few connections between, as you say, Edwards to Hughes, Edwards to Alonso, Alonso to Hughes. It was almost like a connect a ladder, wasn't it, type of thing. And like the reputation, shall I say, that Richard Hughes has with his languages, his knowledge of the game, that type of thing. from what I've seen a few tweets on it, it is actually quite favourable, isn't it, in this regard? It's not just people who are looking at it from, this is the Bournemouth sporting director, where there's less success, there's less pressure, if you want. But actually, there is some positives or quite identifiable things for Richard Hughes, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think he grew up in Italy, so he's got a good knowledge of Italian football, Italian language as well. Played at Portsmouth when Michael Edwards was there. A lot of people who've sort of worked with Harry Redknapp during the era have gone on to do pretty well from Portsmouth. If you look at Gary O'Neill as well, who had that Liverpool connection because he worked, I think, 6 months or just over 6 months at Liverpool as an assistant manager, and then worked his way up at Bournemouth, and then is doing really well at Wolves. So there's something about that Portsmouth era in the early 2000s with Michael Edwards there. But yeah, Hughes, I think Redknapp said, like, he pretty much knows every player on the planet or what they're doing. So he's very knowledgeable. Which is a good thing. I think, obviously, in terms of Liverpool, we've got scouts, we've got the data people to identify players. So, don't necessarily need to have the knowledge. But I think what impresses me about Hughes is the fact that at Bournemouth, he's attracted players and managers who, you know, could have probably done better than Bournemouth, with all respect to Bournemouth. And he's managed to convince them to come to Bournemouth, which I think is an appealing factor when it comes to a sporting director, because that is your main job, really, to convince your targets to sign and to negotiate deals. And he's got a good track record of that. Like you mentioned, he managed to bring Iorola to Bournemouth. Iorola's agent is also Xabi Alonso's agent, so that is an interesting connection. But in terms of, I was fairly... I followed the Milos Kerkez deal to Bournemouth in the summer. I know some big clubs were looking at him, but he really liked the proposal that Bournemouth made, and that's why he decided to sign for them. And there's others as well, like Nathan Aki. Like, he could have gone to bigger clubs than Bournemouth, but he decided to go to Bournemouth. They've got a good recent track record of attracting good young talents, and then selling them on for a profit and developing them as well. So, I think the fact that he knows Edwards, worked with him at Portsmouth, it's got a good track record. I think he ticks all the boxes for me. If Edwards wants him, I'm happy. And I think that alone is enough, but his track record makes him even more impressive.
Yeah, it does feel like, even though he's just in the door, and obviously it's not official yet, I should say that, but it seems inevitable, doesn't it, from all the stories. It does feel like an Edwards appointment. It's his first senior appointment, as he alluded to in his statement. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see what develops in that space. And I can't believe I'm almost saying this, Ben. Liverpool City, the top of the table clash, it feels like about 5 years ago, in a way, with everything that's happened, doesn't it? Even though it was like literally Sunday, just gone, and the emotion, the drama. I mean, there's that element of disappointment that we didn't win. There's the element of pride in the performance. And I know you obviously tweeted profusely about this. We've all done pod stories, but there is a few things stats-wise I really want to get into with City. I mean, some unbelievable performances. And I know you were tweeting for us for Anfield Index and things that we use stats-wise. We've got to go through some of the main players and the main performers in that game. Alexis McAllister, he was unreal in this game, wasn't he? Absolutely unreal.
Yeah, I mean, I think both the midfielders really, but McAllister in particular, won the most duels, made the most recoveries in midfield, 7 passes into the final third, won 3 fouls, obviously got that crucial penalty.
Yeah.
Should have won another one as well, but if we're going to get into that discussion, we might be here all day.
Yeah.
I think personally it was a penalty, and I think most Liverpool fans will agree, but obviously VAR had other things to say and have since been very quiet as well in terms of the statements that they've made. Normally that would come an apology, but this time I think they've run out of apologies potentially. Yeah. But yeah, in terms of McAllister's performance, and I think just looking at like who he was coming up against, because you know he has been putting in these kind of performances, so it wasn't necessarily a surprise for us. But the fact that he did it against one of the best midfields in the world is all the more impressive. And I thought Liverpool won the midfield battle in that game, which I didn't expect to happen heading into it. I thought the midfield was where City were going to edge us slightly.
Definitely.
And I think overall, you know, De Bruyne had to be substituted early. He looked very frustrated. I think partly that's credit to McAllister, but mainly Rotaro Endo did a really good job. I think McAllister frustrated Rodri. I mean, Diaz caused Rodri a lot of trouble as well. They sort of had to double team him with Kyle Walker. And I don't know. I think, McAllister was good. Endo was really good as well. Endo actually won more duels. I think he won 6 out of 7 duels. So he won more duels than Rodri, even though Rodri attempted more duels. I think Rodri only won 4 and attempted 8 or something like that. So again, you know, we are talking about one of the best holding midfielders in the Premier League.
No doubt.
Rotaro Endo, you can make a good argument, outperformed him in this game. So maybe, I think Klopp said after the game, he called him world class. And based on that performance, you wouldn't have any disagreements with Jurgen Klopp about that. But even just based on the last sort of 3 months, you can't argue with it. And I think in particular in the big games, Endo has really stepped up. Like, I think against United, he was one of the best players. Even against Arsenal, I thought he was one of our sort of better players. And now, you know, against City, again, he's up. He won man of the match, I mean, according to Liverpool supporters. So you've got to say he was one of the best players on the pitch as well.
Yeah, indeed. And funny that, how did I know a question about Alexis McAllister would give you a chance to turn it into Rotaro Endo propaganda? But fully justified, and that they were both absolutely brilliant. And I've got to call out a player that I'm going to put my heart, I'll be completely honest about this, hand on heart. I was terrified a bit when he was named in the lineup and there wasn't Ibu Konate, thinking, how's he going to deal with Haaland? But Jurel Kwanzaa rammed the words back down my throat with interest. He was superb in this one, wasn't he?
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit LibertyShield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
Yeah, I think, likewise, I wasn't, maybe terrified is a strong word, but it is like, you know, he still started more games in League One than he has in the Premier League. So there was an unknown sort of quality to him when, even coming into this game, even though we've watched him all season step up every time, you know, he's been called up on, there was that unknown aspect. But he sort of, this game has pretty much fully established him as a genuine option and probably the sort of Matip replacement. But the Matip replacement for Matip, but I still think Liverpool need another centre back. I want to, you know, establish that before Liverpool fans start coming at me. I do think this performance was really good. And I think the best way to sort of, the reason why it was good is because he was just being Jarrell Kwanza. He did what he does best. So, you know, time and time again, when he's on the pitch, he's completed the most passes for Liverpool. In this game, again, he completed the most passes for Liverpool, made the joint most recoveries for Liverpool, 10 passes into the final third, completed 6 out of 11 long balls, won 100% of his aerials. I don't know, I just thought he really sort of came into this game with so much confidence and never looked phased, never was bothered by sort of Haaland or anything like that. He stood up for every challenge. And yeah, there was a little moment when he maybe got a little bit overconfident and lost the ball.
Yeah. But
he didn't end up costing Liverpool. He recovered well. And there was also another moment where it worked out for him and he almost ran the length of the City's half and created a chance out of it. So there is that sort of Matip likeness to him, that Matip quality. And I thought, yeah, he was very good. And it's a testament to his quality that it didn't feel like Liverpool were missing players in the team, you know, like it didn't feel like we were missing anyone. Maybe I think when Salah came on, obviously he wasn't 100%, so it did feel like we were kind of missing a 100% Mohamed Salah. But overall, it didn't feel like, even though we had a very sort of reserve-like team, it never felt like we were missing anyone.
Not at all. And in fact, we dominated that second half, didn't we? Just everything but the goal from the likes of Luis Diaz. But here we are. And speaking of here we are, I mean, there's 10 league games to go now for the top three, Arsenal, City, Liverpool. A lot of people, Ben, as you know, will say this is when the title race begins now, doesn't it? I know there's cups in between, but the title race starts from now. I mean, stats-wise, with something like 10 games to go, the run-in, it feels like this is going to be a positive answer stats-wise, but you could tell me different. How would Liverpool normally fare when they're in this type of race? Because let's be honest, it tends to be recently with a certain club of Manchester City, doesn't it, as well? So how do we normally get on in these?
I mean, historically, we've gone sort of unbeaten in our last 10 games when we are in the title race. I think the last two times anyway. And that doesn't include the COVID season when we won the league title, because we've already won by that point. I think what cost us last time in when we were competing for a quadruple in the 22-23 season were the couple of draws that we got.
Yeah.
That edged. There was a draw, I think, against Tottenham, which probably cost us the title. So we tend to beat the teams that we should and maybe slip up against the sort of better teams in the top six. Last time around, I think it was probably that Tottenham draw that you look at where
Liverpool
got that win, you would have won the league. And now, obviously, got some sort of not as hard a games as I think that Tottenham game was at the time, but, you know, still got Man United coming up. I think that could be a sort of title decider. Obviously, things are also not in our hands anymore.
True.
With the everything sort of depends on the Arsenal City game. I think based on how City played, based on how Arsenal played, I think Arsenal might surprise City. I think a lot of people are expecting City to win that comfortably, but I think
it
might even end up being a draw, which still works for us.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think maybe it won't, that game, whatever happens, it won't rule Arsenal completely out of the title race. I think they're good enough to be in it until the very end, which is going to be annoying for us because we've never been in that situation and Arsenal are also very good side. But it definitely, I think, worked in our favour that Arsenal got the extra time and the penalties and actually managed to go through in the Champions League as well. definitely for England in terms of the coefficient as well.
True.
It was at risk of, you know, the fifth team not being awarded that Champions League spot in the weird, bizarre Champions League that is going to be happening next season.
Yeah, through the computer, which will have its say on the draw and everything going forward. But that, yeah, that is probably a topic for another day. We are looking at those games in the future. We're trying not to, and I know there's cups to talk about, but yeah, everyone's gearing up for Arsenal, City, Liverpool, Brighton just before as well, isn't it? So what a weekend that promises to be. And before then, even the game tomorrow, I mean, we can be honest on this, Ben. I mean, it's a dead rubber, isn't it, essentially? 5-1 from the first leg, a hammer in. It's maybe more about sort of youngsters and possibly a combination of getting people back, isn't it? Like, as you mentioned, these players, Salah to get minutes, or Bosley, you'd think he did the press conference, so that usually indicates he starts. All about getting these players the minutes they need to get fit. Stats-wise, what I wanted to ask you, there's a lot of suspicion in this one that it could be, and again, we don't know, but you'll get minutes for the likes of Jadon Dans if he's recovered from concussion, which is expected. Lewis Kumars, Cade Gordon potentially, isn't it? Again, ringing the changes with the kids, and we don't even call them kids, but Connor Bradley, Jarrell Kwanzaa even start, even though we don't treat them that way anymore, but it's true. Could this rival our sort of youngest sides we've put out in cups or in Europe? Because I know we put, well, it just feels this season that we've almost hit all the barriers in terms of youngsters with McConnell, Clark, all the records. Stats-wise, could this be challenging that again with this lineup?
I mean, we've already broken that record this season. I think we've fielded, in the group stages, we've fielded a side that was, at the average age was 21.9 years.
Wow.
So you'd imagine that would be sort of difficult to rival, especially because we are going to have to play some senior players.
Yeah.
I think that in the group, I can't remember which game it was in the group stages. I think it was Union SG, but we definitely broke that record. And then before that, it was Rodgers held the record again in a game against Bordeaux in the Europa League, when it wasn't the team that he initially fielded, but it, like, at the end of the 90 minutes, he had the youngest Liverpool team ever at the time, which was 22 and a half years. That featured Cameron Brannigan, Jordan Rossiter, Pedro Chavela, Jordan Ibe, and Divock Origi, who was actually quite young at the time because it was
15,
so he was only 20. So it was a very young team. I think it will be surprisingly strong given the result and given the fact that it's at Anfield, given, like you said, we're pretty much
finished.
But I think I'm expecting quite a few of the senior players to be involved. I think the centre-back question is interesting because even if we're looking at, you know, at senior level, we've got Gomez, Kwanzaa is now considered a senior option, and Van Dijk, and then
that's it, yeah.
And then at academy level, Amara Nalo, who was in the squad against City, he's ineligible because the B list, you can't register players to the B list under UEFA rules if they haven't been at the club for 2 years. So obviously, Nalo arrived from West Ham in the summer, so he can't feature. And then I think the next senior option after that is Carter Pinnington, who's just turned 17. And he's been involved a lot in the Premier League too. But
hey, guys, it's Eddie Gibbs from Anfield Index here. I hope you're enjoying this podcast, and I'm sorry to call time on the show before it ends. In the current climate, it's tougher than ever before to offer podcasts for free. At Anfield Index, we produce over 75 free shows every month, which I'm confident is unparalleled in the LFC sphere. Whilst we'd love to offer everything for free, the production costs now make this impossible. That said, we don't want to follow the model of other channels and lock all of our content behind a paywall. So what we've decided to do is to continue offering every show for free, but cut that offering to 30 minutes on our longer shows. So to get all of our shows in full and enjoy the best of everything we have to offer, we really hope you'll consider supporting the channel and signing up at AnfieldIndexPro.com. For about the price of one cup of coffee, you'll get every podcast in full with zero ads. You'll also get access to our LFC VIP community, where you can enjoy live podcasts, engage with our podcasters, and chat with other Reds in real time. So that website again, anfieldindexpro.com. Join today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.